You say we don't know. We say we don't know. We say Drek This Out.
Hi, welcome to Drek This Out. This is your guest host of the week. My name is Kat, and I'm here with Suki. Hello. And Deb.
Hello.
And Andrea.
Hello.
And Tribbles.
We seem to have a superfluity of Tribbles here. So we're here to talk about Strange New Worlds, Season 2, Episode 1, the premiere episode for this season. And I'd like to get everybody's initial thoughts on the episode. Andrea.
I feel kind of bad because I have very mixed feelings and I don't know why, because the episode has everything in it that I would have absolutely wanted from an episode. And I just kind of, when it felt, I was like, oh, I don't know. I enjoyed it better on second watch, but yeah, I have quite mixed feelings and I couldn't put my finger on why. I feel like I'm being that person who's really hard to please and just doesn't even know what they want, which is probably on brand for me. But yeah, I don't know. It is my honest answer, I think.
Trust me, you are not alone. Deb?
Yeah, that was pretty much exactly what I was going to say, which is why I didn't want to go first. I don't know. And it was better on the second viewing. Mind you, I'd had quite a bit to drink last night, and I think there were gaps in my memory. So, yeah, I don't know, and everybody else's thoughts seem to be quite positive, so perhaps we're just more nuanced here, or we were all still too pissed to. But my notes are that, really.
One page only?
Of wow. A5, yeah. I mean, I did start making notes on the back of an envelope when I first watched it, but I don't know. Maybe it was the overhype because of the end of Picard. You know, first season was so good. Anyway, this is a brief thing.
Suki.
Yes, I'm going to echo both of you guys. When I first watched it, I just thought it seems to be really good. It's okay. Bang, there's a lot of things happening. And then when I did the rewatch, I thought, no, there's a lot of dragging out. There's a lot of stuff being dragged out here, and there's not really too much in this episode apart from the whole setting up of the Gorn conflict that's about to come. So I'm going to say exactly the same. It's just a mixed bag at the moment. Now, Kat, what's your initial thoughts, Bob?
My initial thoughts were meh, and the reason was partly because I have Amazon Prime and Paramount Plus, and for some reason, the subtitles race ahead of the dialogue by about 5 pages, I think. So I wasn't able to follow all the dialogue very well. And I ended up, downloading an episode from somewhere else. I was able to follow it because the subtitles were synced with the dialogue, which was nice. So I liked it a little better the second time. But honestly, I just felt like the writing was off. Like, they had a bunch of good ideas, but they put them together the wrong way. So, yeah. And I was so hyped up because, oh, Strange New Worlds is so great. I can't wait for the first episode. And then this. So, yeah, I was not that excited about the episode.
I just want to start then, really, with the actual fight scene. It's just strange seeing Chapel and Benga, right, who are supposed to be the doctors and medics, and they're going full on with the kicking, shoot, and punching and everything. And I was just thinking, where does this suddenly come from? Because I did not know that there were these sort of characters. Now got two hands up at me. Right, and Andrew put hers up first.
So I quite liked seeing the kind of the medical team doing something different and getting some action and stuff like that. But it was just, I found the whole, like, let's get jacked up on space steroids that last like 10 minutes and fight 25 Klingons. Like, it just seemed a little bit too much. Like, the first bunch, and then it's like, yeah, let's just fight some more. And it's like, well, mine's starting to wear off. Oh, I'll kick the shit out of these two on my own. And it seemed a bit silly. And like, someone was really, really enjoying shooting slow motion fight scenes. So I kind of thought, let's just do a bit more because it's fun. So it did. I liked that they had a backstory. I liked that they'd been in the war. I liked that there was some kind of justification in the plot. And I did like them seeing, like, kind of in a different light, doing different things. And I think, like, often, like, if you kind of end up in sick bay, you don't really get the opportunity to do those kind of episodes. So there was things about it I liked, but also it did seem to get stupid kind of quick. So it was an odd choice, I think.
No, I totally agree with that. That's what I thought about it. You see them both fighting and jumping and knocking the living shit out of the Klingons, and then all of a sudden, right, it just started. After a little bit, it was okay, and then it just suddenly started to drag and drag and drag and drag, and I actually timed it. There's about 10 minutes worth of fight sequences just there. Right now, Deb, I understand that I just barged in there, so if you want to say your little bit.
So magnanimous of you. yes, I did want to say my little bit.
Make sure it's little, aren't we?
I kind of agree with Andrea that the first time I watched it in particular, I just thought, what? You know, this is completely out of character. But the second time, I still thought it was a bit OTT, because if it was that easy just to take drugs, you know, it's a good job the Klingons haven't spotted it. You know. But what I did like about it was, as Andrea said, all of a sudden you saw this relationship between them and the way that they looked at each other, the way that they communicated without talking. And there's clearly a history there. And when they talked about... you know, I guess that means that they served together in the Klingon War, that there was a lot of pain and the way that they understood each other. But I'm sure we'll go on to Pelia, but she talks so slow that it's really pissing me off. And with the slowdown of the fighting as well, I kind of thought they were really short on this, weren't they? They're just sort of egging it out to get an extra 10 minutes or something or other. Slow down, Carol. Make that last an extra 2 minutes, will you? Or let's slow down the action a bit.
So I think what was interesting for me is because I've drawn Mbenga recently, and I kind of try to think about the character and what that character's about to me, and try to kind of get that in the drawing. And I really wanted to. I thought he was like this really warm, cuddly, like lovely guy, like almost like, you know, like Mr. Sunshine. And he is a really convincing mean motherfucker. I was like, whoa, like I wouldn't see that coming. It's almost like I want to draw him again, just like kind of like on the like fighty like space speed. Like this is like what he looks like when he's going to hit you.
So I was really uncomfortable with the doctors fighting, partly because I was thinking about their hands, you know. Don't hurt the hands. And partly because I was thinking it would be so much better if at first they tried to outsmart the Klingons, you know, if they did something to outsmart them. It's just the writing. Ah. And then they do all this action-y stuff and that bone crunching, jaw crunching action. I just thought little Chapel is gonna get smushed, you know? She's just like 100 pounds or something. And the Klingons are, you know, big.
Yeah, that's the thing that I really stood out for me as well, was these pair are not known for their fighting skills. They're there for their medical reasons. And yet they're taking out big, beefy soldiers, Klingons, and they're just knocking them out. I know they're jacked up on whatever juice that they've got in their system, but I still didn't think they would still be able to do this. Klingons are supposed to be extremely strong, but these pair were just knocking the shit out of them, basically. They were just knocking three bells out of them, and they were just doing it with ease, and it just didn't stand right with me. It just didn't stick with me. That's probably why I just found it too much. But I did like the scene right at the end, just before they shoot off into space, and I thought to myself, yeah, you can see there's a close bond there between them, right? But I was also expecting a kiss as well for some reason. I was just thinking it's their last moment. They're going to go in for a snog, but it never happened.
It looked really close, Deb.
Yeah.
I'm just relieved. Could you imagine Spock finding out if they'd snogged? But that look that they gave each other, but the amount of the time that they had together where there just wasn't any talking. And I thought that was pretty special. But this evening, as I was putting telly on to watch Have I Got News For You, they had a bit of the Trooping of the Colour. I just had it on in the background, not really watching it. And they always go on about these are proper soldiers, you know, they fight in the wars, you know, they're commissioned. And I think that's the thing as well, you know, although these are doctors, I don't think they could kick the shit out of Klingons, even if they are drugged up. And the fact that I mean, obviously, he carries this adrenaline or whatever, special stuff, because of things that's happened in the past, because she says, do you still carry it? Even without, they would be trained to fight because they were involved in the Klingon War. They wouldn't have been on, at that stage, it would have been a warship, in the same way that people that parade up and down in furry hats outside Buckingham Palace, you know, you wouldn't want to meet them and piss them off on a dark night.
I was going to say, this episode stole two things from The Expanse, a science fiction series that I absolutely adore besides all the Star Treks. Two things. One was Melba's super adrenaline kick-ass potion, which is what they seem to have. And the other is the jump into space. In season 6, Naomi Nagata jumps into space and tries to get across to another spaceship, and she makes it. But I just thought, really? We're ripping off The Expanse now? Well, okay. It's a good show, so go for it, guys. Suki, do you have your hand up?
I did have my hand up, but now that you've mentioned spoilers for season 6 of The Expanse, because I'm actually on season 3 at the moment.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
but it doesn't matter. Andrea, come on.
I was going to say it was a little bit steely because I felt like there was twice with Lan. I think the drinking game with the Klingon felt very much like Marion Ravenwood.
Felt like my time at university.
Well, you know, I'm not averse to like a bit of a blood wine drinking game, but it did feel very Indiana Jones. It very much felt like that scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I think the little bomb scene was just like, it was just lifted out of Return of the Jedi, wasn't it? It was just like, I'll let me thermal detonator off or whatever it was. I think it has borrowed influences from other science fiction this week, I think is fair to say.
Yeah, and it was tropey too, don't you think? The drinking him under the table thing. Because I've seen it, other than Marion Ravenwood, I've seen it in other things too. Suki?
Yeah, I was just going to say, they have borrowed a lot of stuff for this episode. And I've a feeling it was just like, they need a season opener. The car really starts straight off with Una's trial. They need an action-packed show. But they also need to sideline the captain, because I assume he's going to be doing something for next week's episode ready for Una's trial. So all this stuff has to happen to get people engrossed in the episode. And some of it was good. Some of it just sort of dragged. Andrea?
I think in a way I thought I would have been more comfortable with it as a mid-season episode, because I think you took Pike out of commission. Number One's already out of commission. And it was almost like, oh, kind of like, it felt like an odd jumping in point. But at the same time, sometimes I think when there's an unresolved cliffhanger from the previous season, it is a bit of a like just race to the end. Like, we'll get this resolved in episode 1 and then we can all move on and get back to what we were doing. So I'm kind of pleased they didn't just do a hand-wavy everything's all right now, Una's back to work, it all got fixed like in between seasons, or a very rushed resolution. And there's clearly something going on there, because I think they took Pike out of commission, and it must be for a reason. And I feel the way they were talking about this lawyer, it's got to be somebody who, I think if it's just some random person with some name we've never heard, then I kind of think it would be a bit of an anticlimax. So I'm hoping they're building up to somebody appearing who would be quite interesting. And I've not seen spoilers, I don't know who that is. So,
so can you think, I was going to mention. I was going to mention somebody as mentioned, not in the notes, but somewhere online, that there's a certain lawyer that appeared in the original series. All right, so that might be coming, might be the one that they've gone after.
Oh, but, I know who that is. I think
it's a she. So I'm thinking, Samantha T. Cogley. I don't know.
Okay, there you go. There's another spoiler from the Mouth of Cat.
Well, to be honest, when she said original, I went, oh, I know who that is.
Yeah, I don't think TOS counts as spoilers at this point, Suki. other deeper thoughts, folks?
Well, I just wanted to talk about Spock's command, right? How he suddenly, first chance he's got to run the ship and be in charge, he's sort of got some sort of anxiety panic attack, and he's not really comfortable in doing it. But then the first thing that he has to do, he decides to defy the admiral and he's going to steal the Enterprise, and that's his first command basically, and he's going to steal the Enterprise. I'm just wondering, is that what he would normally do? Would he do this? But I'm not sure he would. Deb?
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, the Doctor should have just ruled him unfit to command, because he knows that he's just, you know, he's not stable after the Gorn emotional bit, and he can't control his emotions and can't think rationally. In fact, he does incredibly go against his emotions in shooting the ship when he thinks he's killed Benger and Nurse Chapel. If you look at it rationally, you think, they needed to get Pike out of the way because they very much shine on all the characters, which is what I love about it. And this was a chance for Spock to be, in fact, all of them to be out of their comfort zone. The fighting of the medical staff, Spock in command. And, all of them had a moment where they were out of their comfort zone and they were sort of challenged. But I loved Spock. I just wanted to give him a cuddle, really.
Well, doesn't everybody? Andrea?
I've got to be honest, though, Steel of the Enterprise in Star Trek terms is like, it might as well be called Tropey McTrope Face, because yes. Like, how many times has someone stolen the Enterprise? It's like, I don't know, it's like a Vauxhall Nova of space, and it just gets nicked off the estate every week. Like, you know, it must be really easy to steal. That's all I'm going to say. Like, Suki.
It's like a badge of honour, isn't it? You know, you take command, at least one of your command initial missions will be to steal a spaceship. Starship, and that's it, off of the way. But it's also refreshing to know that you had the chief engineer Pellia, right, who's now coming on board, I believe, right, she sussed it out straight away without having to she just saw through the bullshit straight away and goes, I want to be on this ride with you.
Yeah, Pellia, I mean, obviously she's a very well-known actor in America. I did read up a bit about she was in Taxi, so she's getting on a bit. I don't know her.
Have you ever seen the movie The Princess Bride?
No. Andrew must have done. No.
Scrooged, no. Princess Bride, and The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Andrew's desperate to get in. I was just say, she's... Again, I'm against sort of what other people... Oh, I thought you were going to sit on mute and you're just going, talking too much. You, can we mute Suki?
No, she behaves.
So, yeah, she was pissing me off because she was speaking too slowly. She had a strange accent, which just sounded like a New York Jewish accent, a bit exaggerated. I don't know. She was just very, very annoying. But having said that, she's got she used to teach at Starfleet Academy, and she knows Spock's mum. So I think there's going to be interesting relationships, because how many of the Enterprise crew did she actually teach? And maybe this is another reason for Pike not being there. Maybe, you know, it was Pike's teacher. Maybe she's got a lot of backstories.
Maybe he was a bad student. Andrea, you've patiently held your hand up.
So, for me, Carol Kane will forever be the ghost of Christmas past in Scrooge. And she pretty much played it like that. As soon as she started speaking, I was like, oh, okay. I know where this is going. But I loved her. She's got this kind of mad pixie quality that I was quite drawn to. She's half finished, but she's on my drawing board already. So she's made an impression on me. But yeah, I was very much feeling that sort of that Scrooged vibe. So that's probably it. But I am quite shocked that Deb has never seen The Princess Bride. And that's something I'm going to need to correct quite quickly.
Yeah, well, Carol Kane, for me, I'm more familiar with her when she was in Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And she's wonderful in that wacky, crazy, out of the straight mad character. Where she's like the landlord for the main character. So she has these comedic qualities, and she's playing up on these comedic qualities in this episode straight away, the way she's interacting with Spock, playfully teasing him, and she's just bringing all these... I think it's going to bring out a different dynamic from Spock that the other characters don't bring out. So there will be, I think, some great scenes coming up between Ethan Peck and Carol Kane soon. Andrea?
I think I'm pretty sure I've got no recollection of sort of the Lanthanites being mentioned before. So I think we've got a new species. And it's something that Star Trek haven't... I mean, they've done the kind of omnipotent kind of being that has like a ridiculous lifespan. But typically, like, Vulcans live the longest, don't they? They see the most. Whereas we've got so many... They've lived amongst humans. And I think there's quite interesting backstory there. It's like, how long was she there? How much has she seen? So I think I quite like the concept, I've got to be honest. But also that she's lived a really long time and is just really fucking bored. Like, let's just have some fun. Like, you're going to, like... It's going to be, like... A case of no fucks given, I think, which I think makes for a fun character.
That thing about her boredom, right, and the way she had that conversation with Spock, and Spock just immediately assumed it's because you just see all these people dying and because all your friends just passing away and stuff like that. But she immediately, she just tells him, no, that isn't it. It's because she's bored. She's probably doing the same old thing she's been doing at Starfleet Academy, just doing, teaching the same courses all the while, and she's just got bored. And then when she sees what's happening on the Enterprise, and she's probably heard the tales of what Enterprise has been doing for the last couple of years, and she's decided she wants a piece of this action. She wants to be out there exploring, maybe just doing this. So, again, I just think she's going to be a great addition to the crew, basically. There was another addition to the crew, actually, this time around as well. Not just Carol Kane. We had Mitchell. Now, I don't think we saw much of Mitchell in the last season, but in this one, she took a bit more prominent role. She's sitting next to Ortega. And then she's also in the little briefing earlier on, where they're all having a discussion with Spock. And she just seems to be, like, familiar with that group. So I think this is, like, a new... Somebody else that's going to be around where they'll be able to use as a sounding board.
I was just going to say, and it was a very brief one, but I think Chief J as well is a new character. And I know one of our regular listeners has inquired about this, so it will come up later. But my understanding is the guy who played Chief Kyle has left the show. So I think the role of Transporter Chief was available. So I'm guessing Chief J is going to kind of fill that role for this season.
So it's, sorry, Dave. You know, it looks like you're going to have a bit of a disappointment there.
There was just, there was no Chief of Security at the moment, so there's another gap of someone else being able to join. And Bruce, what's his name? Andrea.
Horrock.
He said that he's not left Star Trek. So whether he's coming back as a Klingon or another character or a Gorn, I don't know.
I think Chief of Security was just because Lan wasn't on the ship.
But she's not rejoined the ship, has she?
I think she's gone back, hasn't she? She was kind of, she was looking at a shipmate, like, oh, I'm off now kind of thing. So I think Lan's just going to come back.
She's supposed to be in Birmingham.
Is she?
When?
When? Destination Trek, August.
Christina.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's just released a single as well, hasn't she? Or an album?
Mm.
But, I might put a link up to that album in the show notes.
Wasn't she in Line of Duty?
I never saw her in Line of Duty. I saw her in the Noel Clark show, which was Bloodsport or Bloodline. I can't remember now.
Was she in The Princess Bride?
She was in Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
That's all you need to know.
Yes.
Okay. Nothing better than that.
Something else that I enjoyed, and maybe we can talk about the special effects or the graphics or whatever. The opening sequence I loved with all the ships zipping around, and I thought some of those pilots are a little iffy. I don't know. They look like they're going to bang into something. But I love the busyness of the scene. That's how a space dock should be. And I love the new titles for this year, the Enterprise really being shown off. And that last year, they seemed kind of static. The shots of the Enterprise seemed kind of static, like there she was way in the distance flying among the, you know, this year it's more like a zippy sports car. Suki?
The title sequences last year, did Rebecca Romijn appear straight after Anson Mount's name? Because this year, I've noticed it says and Rebecca Romijn. I can't remember if that was the same as last year. She just changed up the cast list now.
Got a new agent.
Oh, possibly. More money.
I was just going to say the and thing was something I learned about through Discovery Season 1. And it does seem to be like almost if you're not first, you want to be the and. I don't really understand that, to be honest, but it is a thing.
Jason Isaacs is now an and. It's, yeah, it's when you go up in the world, he's an and.
Yeah, that used to be also starring. That used to be starring, and now it's and. So it's strange. Yeah.
If you have Jason Isaacs on your bingo card for this week's Trek This Out, please cross it off now.
And if you got Andrea mentioning this bingo card, please cross that off now.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
So what did you think of the Klingons? The Klingons are back to looking like next-gen Klingons.
Well, kind of, but they look buffoonish to me. I can't explain why. I think it's the mustaches. I think it's the way they wear their mustaches.
Yeah, but they were evil, weren't they? They were rebellious. And if they're rebellious, they've got to have a moustache. That was always the case, isn't it? That shows they're evil.
I just mean the moustache is wrong. It's like they have a moustache, but it's the wrong moustache. I'm fussy. Andrea?
I was just going to say, I know people get really kind of aerated about the way Klingons look, and I'm just one of those people who just doesn't care. It's like, I know the Klingons. I know what Klingons are about. I'm totally fine with it. He's a Klingon. I know exactly where I'm at with his storyline. I don't really care. Like, I know people are like, oh, well, they don't look like original series Klingons and they don't like Discovery Klingons. It's like, I don't care. Don't care. Sure.
Yeah, but they don't talk about that.
We don't talk.
The Klingons, I just found them a bit strange in this episode. They're supposed to be really badass Klingons, and the sword's supposed to be elitist, and they just don't want to mingle. But they seem to have made an alliance with Federation soldiers to create this conglomerate of profiteers who want to just go back to war. And you just think, so these ain't the Klingons' way of doing things. I understand they might want to go to war, but to ally themselves with humans just to do this, I don't think they'd do that. And there's also M'Benga, who's knocking three bells out of one of the Klingons, and he's then restrained by Chapel, right? And she says, you can't kill him, right? Otherwise, you ain't going to go. And then all of a sudden, this Klingon just starts spouting all the information to him. And I think a Klingon, to me, I don't think a Klingon would do that. He would retaliate, he would fight, he wouldn't give away secrets. But for some reason, this one did like it. And I was thinking, no, it might have been like a one-off, but it just didn't seem right for the Klingon to do this thing.
I think that's part of what I thought made them seem buffoonish in this episode. They just didn't seem like regular Klingons to me. And not to make them a monoculture. I'm sure there are crooks and devious types in every culture in Star Trek. So I don't object so much to them forming a syndicate, you know, a few of them forming a syndicate with a few Federation people, you know, bad Federation people.
No, I don't much mind about them forming a syndicate. They were sort of like Ferengi Klingons, weren't they? I mean, again, like sci-fi can be a comment about our world at the moment, people that profiteer from war. But what I did comment on when I messaged Andrea last night, it was good to see the D7 battlecruiser back, partly because nobody else gets that they look like Bertie Bassett. Do you remember off the Dolly Mixtures, the Bertie Bassett figures with the little hat that goes? I mean, I can put a picture on comparing it because I sent it to Andrea last night. And what's more, when Bertie Bassett's ship was going through with all those spangles around, it was like a splash packet of spangles. You're too young to know what spangles are.
Yeah, I am too young.
Yeah. And it's about time that they were known as the Bertie Bassett ship. So that was it.
I feel like these references to vintage British confectionery have a particular audience, so we might need to provide some imagery to accompany the podcast this week.
It can be provided. Just let me know what you want to put up, and I'll
I sent one to Andrea last night showing the comparison, but not the spangles. To be fair,
a Klingon bird of prey does look like it's wearing Bertie Bassett's hat. I am going to give you that. It is a thing. It is.
Well, there we are then. That's canon. was something else. I think we shouldn't. This is going to use all my bits now, but I want to go back to how brilliant Spock was, because I don't mind that he's different than the other Spocks. He comes across as very young, very vulnerable, very confused, and a lot of that's explained about his emotional barriers being quite low at the moment. And but the way Ethan manages to convey so much in his face of that doubt and the love as well. Oh, when Nurse Chapel walks in, really, I just adore Spock. But I was very disappointed at one point when he got handed that Vulcan banjo. There was a good opportunity to break into Bilbo Baggins.
Oh, come on.
Or if I had a hammer, hello, cat. Cat's cat. You know, I couldn't put all together now. If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in them. Oh, come on, it should have happened. If anybody comes to Destination Check, we'll all have to bring our Vulcan banjos.
And is that what that instrument was?
Oh, I think it's called a Vulcan lute.
Some Vulcan name, but which escapes us at the moment. Just trying to kind of get past Deb bringing the comedy value. I know I shouldn't, but I really, really, it's like I will go down with this ship now. And I think I like it more because I know it's doomed. I don't know. I think that says more about me as a person than it does about Star Trek, to be honest. But yeah, I'm totally aboard the like the doomed ship, and I find it quite cute, and I'm kind of rooting for them, even though I know it's not going to end well. So yeah, I have bought into that completely.
Yeah, but if Pike doesn't end up in a wheelchair, there might be an alternative future where there are lots of baby Chapel Spocks.
Sucky, I feel like you were desperate that that hand shot.
No, well, I don't think they're going to start changing the futures. Like, this has been set in stone that Pike is going to be in that wheelchair, and he's accepted his fate. So the doomed romance of Chapel and Spock is probably going to play out over the course of this series, however long it lasts. So I think they may get together, and then that'll be it by the time Kirk takes over the ship.
So that also means Bilbo Baggins is canon then.
Full disclosure, I am a Spock Uhura shipper from Trek 2009 on, so I kind of feel ambivalent about it, but I do very much like Jess Bush as Chapel, and I like the writing for her. It's very, very good. And her outfits are just bang on, 4 stars. I won't object too much. I think they were good together. Andrea.
So I think one of the things on that kind of that Chapel trajectory, which was really mentioned in passing, and I normally kind of do Easter eggs as a bit of a bunch, but was that idea about that sort of archaeological medicine. And in the original series, in What a Little Girl's Made Of, we kind of met her ex, Roger Corby, who did archaeological medicine, whatever that means. That doesn't sound like it means anything to me, but okay. So I wonder if they're going to throw him in the mix at some point, because clearly she has a relationship with him between this point and TOS. And is Spock going to be presented with a love rival very soon? I would quite like that to happen, to be honest.
Well, yep. as we've been saying, it's a doomed romance, and the way to end a romance is to bring somebody else in to end it, basically. So,
but that in turn is a doomed romance, so it's like it's the doom of it. I like these layers of doom. I'm loving it.
angst. Oh, love it.
No, that's Lindsay. That is.
Because she's not here, I need to maybe take on the mantle of the angst queen for this season, maybe. That could be my job.
Step up and do the angst, yeah. I, speaking of angst, I did, and this is going to hurt your feelings maybe, but I think Spock angst is best when Spock is trying to fight his emotions, and he gives into them only to regret it, and like that, and this episode, it just seemed like he was full on emotional. And something I really objected to was him leaving the bridge right after a D7 Klingon battlecruiser had appeared, you know, and he's down in sickbay crying on the chapel. I just thought that was a bit much.
Right at that particular moment, he's an emotional person because he's just seen the person that he's clearly in love with possibly die at his hands, because he's the one that's ordered the fire. So he's really emotional. And when he suddenly realises they might have survived, of course he's going to start legging it to the transporter room, even though there might be something happening. He's just thought, no, I need to be there, and I need to... And the other thing that I noticed was he's there trying to save Chapel's life, and Benga's still lying there. Who's trying to save him? I mean, he probably ran in and realised that Benga's got his eyes open and reaching out. Maybe, yeah, okay, whereas Chapel's there. But where's the medical crew? Where's the people that would also be rushing in to help her? It just seems strange.
They should have been down there in the transporter room, Deb.
But it was a minimal cruise on board, wasn't it?
Of course.
Yes. And but there would have been a transport person there. And I think I read one comment from someone said, I think they should teach the transport chief how to do CPR. So they're not relying on the acting captain to rush down there.
I just thought, when you said it was minimal crew, I just thought the entire medical team were actually on the transport pad dying, right? So who's going to actually be there to actually help the medical team to survive?
I was just going to say, I've got my little weekly selection of Easter eggs that I quite like. I think when they were talking about the Klingon War, there were some shots from Discovery Season 1. The Shenzhou could be seen floating around. And it was quite nice to see Pike in his blue uniform. Just a little throwback in the recap section. Starbase 1 appears in TOS, particularly in Spock and Mok. So I don't know if T'Pring's coming back. That's a bit foreboding there, because I'm throwing other boyfriends in the mix. But, you know, T'Pring is still on the scene. And I do believe she's in this series, but I don't know for definite. I quite liked that Una referred to Pike as a Boy Scout, which, of course, is a little callback to, that's what David calls Kirk in Wrath of Khan. So there's a little bit of a parallel there. And we know we're going to see Kirk at some point. So he's coming. Spock's lute, which, of course, he plays in the original series, and I think his last known scene with it was in Star Trek V, so that's a known one. We've mentioned Roger Kirby. I was really pleased to see Uhura's green earrings. I know that's a really little thing, but I have quite a lot of affection for those earrings. I have a pair which are very similar, so I was quite happy to see those make an appearance. On the map, when they were talking, right at the very end, when they were talking about the Gorn War, or the potential Gorn War, which is an odd one, because I think in Arena, which I'm going to mention in a minute, the Gorn were sort of very much unknown. Like, Starfleet don't know anything about the Gorn. We don't know who they are. We don't really know, like, what their business is. So if there's going to be a Gorn War, it's going to be a secret war, which we know Starfleet are capable of, but that's just something to be aware of. But Cestus 3 is the planet on Arena. So we're in Gorn territory, I think. The ship that was built as a kind of false flagship was a Crossfield class, which is the same class as Discovery and the Glenn, but they were, of course, both modified to have a spore drive, so they don't look quite the same. So that's your little ship fact for the week. And I think that's all of my little ones. I think the only other thing I noticed was there was a hint that Ortegas was in the war as well, when she said, I've hidden from enough Klingons. So I don't know if there's some backstory to come there as well. So those are my little Easter eggs of the week, folks. The bunny's left the building.
I'll go into my final thoughts on this, which is Uhura is promoted during the off season between the two seasons, so she's now an ensign. There's a couple of camera angles that were used in this show this time around, and the one that I really enjoyed, and there's one that I really enjoyed, and one that was just strangely weird. I just don't know why they used it. One that was when the Enterprise has been told they can lead the space dock, and it suddenly powers forward, but instead of carrying on going forward, it does like a turn and just shoots straight up. And I thought that was, I don't think I've really seen that before in a Star Trek show, where they've just completely changed the angle of and they just shot forward. And the other weird one was when M'Benga and Chapel are fighting and they're cornered, and the camera is at turns 180 degrees, they jump through, and then when they jump through to the bottom, the camera turns again 180 degrees. And it just, the way it looked, it just seemed strange. If it had been like there was some sort of gravity thing happening, where they, once they jumped, the camera is righting itself. But it didn't seem to be like that. It just seemed weird. Kat, you had your hand up just there.
Oh, I thought, as soon as I saw that camera angle thing, I said, I bet this episode was directed by Olatunde Osunsumi, he did that all the time in Discovery. Just, if you had a show where things were upside down and all that kind of stuff, he was the one that directed the episode. So I wonder.
Chris Fisher directed this one.
Ah, did he? Okay.
Different person. He's probably been mentored by other director.
there was a lot of the camera twisting, wasn't there, as when they were navigating through the what's-its. But my only bit, I just want to say our drunk Spark, so cute. Again, I want to hug him. And if you were being really pinnicky, you could say Spock can't get drunk, but I don't care because he was so cute drunk. And of course, the tribute to Nichelle at the end, which I had to pause.
Yes, I cried at that. I cried at that. I actually had tears rolling down, especially the last sentence. It just made me just tear up badly.
Andrea?
I was just going to say on the subject of kind of drunk Spock, I suppose according to canon, like, he can't be, but I was really feeling his like rough as fuck vibe when he had his like his little cup here and he was like, please don't make loud noises. I was like, yeah, no, I'm feeling it. It's okay. But I think that tribute was lovely as well. And I think that's been shared quite a lot this week once the kind of shows come out. So I think that was quite nice. I think Celia Gooden had kind of shared that on hers as well. So I saw that before I'd seen the episode.
Just one more I've got, and that is Spock saying, and where he struggled to have something to say when he was leaving Space Dock. And to come out with, I would like this ship to go. Dramatic pause. Now. Right, it just seemed right for Spock, I think.
I'm going to be the naysayer and say I'm so tired of that joke. The whole thing with the captains having to come up with a different expression to make the ship go. For Christ's sake, everybody just say engage, or everybody say go, or God. I'm sorry, but it's just a bit much for me. Andrew.
It seems to have become like a bit of a sort of point of fan service, hasn't it? If you think about the last episode of Picard, they left us on the cliffhanger of what Sevens would be. So it does seem to have got a bit of traction. I don't know if the things are... I think they're probably making it into a thing.
Well, apparently, Jason Isaacs, when he was captain, was trying to find something, and he did have one, and it had been used before or something or other, so he ended up not really having one, but they debated for a long time then, so maybe it kind of started. But when I drive my car, I have to start it with pressing a button, and I use engage, but maybe I ought to come up with mine. I shall workshop it.
Lorca did have one. He just kept it short. Go.
I was just going to say, like, in fairness, though, like, I did realise that I do absolutely work for Spock, because I think if my boss had to, like, get things done, it would be as, like, socially awkward and, and cringy as that. It was like, yep, I'm relating.
I know Brent Spiner sort of talked about it, and probably Leonard Nimoy as well. Both characters of Data and Spock are characters which people that have difficulties with social communication can identify with, and that includes a lot of people on the spectrum, but also people that are just quite shy and find it quite awkward, and all of a sudden you find someone that you can really, really appreciate and admire and like, but also identify with, who isn't perfect, who is struggling to understand human emotions and how to act in things. And I think characters like that are very unique. And what Ethan Peck's Spock has done is been able to take that back even further, because of we are very much a more human Spock, and his engagement with the Gorn, where he had to break his emotional barriers, he hasn't quite recovered from that at the moment as well. I am definitely a team Spock, Ethan Spock.
He's wonderful. Andrea?
I was just going to say, I've met him in person, and he was really, really lovely. He was a really nice guy. I thought he was very engaging with fans. I thought he was
very humble.
Yeah, I was just going to say he came across as quite a humble bloke, but I don't know what it is. I've got to be honest. I feel like Deb will give us a dirty look for this, but I'm finding them more attractive as the weeks go on, I've got to say.
Does this mean he's about to uproot, take the place of somebody very precious to the group, by any chance?
No, but we can have extra room.
I've always got room for extras in the basement. You know, you can always squeeze a little one in. I mean, Ken Mitchell's been...
not exactly a little bloke.
You know.
Ken Mitchell was in the attic, but...
He's got his own annex, to be fair, Ken Mitchell.
He has now, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I love Ethan Peck's performance. I think he's just wonderful with what he is given. I think my favorite Ethan Peck moment so far has been when T'Pring said she was reading up on sex, she was reading up on human sexuality, and Spock was sipping his wine and he kind of went, I just thought that was really
yeah.
Have you got any last thoughts, Kat?
Just that the character bits, I may not have said this, the character bits were all really, really well done. They've got a fantastic group of actors on this show. So even though I may not have agreed with the script choices, the actors did beautifully with what they were given. I just wish the fight supervisors would take a vacation for a week or so. But beyond that,
they probably used all their fight budget on just this one episode anyway.
They may have. I kind of hope so. I thought La'an got shortchanged in the fight department, you know, that it was too bad. She didn't get to fight. She only got to drink. But I definitely loved the scene with Mbenga diagnosing Spock with having tension, and he brought out the musical instrument to ease that. I just thought that was wonderful.
Can I just ask Suki, have you ever heard the Leonard Nimoy Bilbo backing?
I have heard it, and I realised what you were going on about. I didn't understand what you were talking about earlier.
I could see your face, yeah.
Yeah, and then when you just sent me that thing in the message, I thought, is that's what she's talking about, the Legend of Bilbo Baggins? Right, yeah, got you. I am now fully up to date with your train of thought.
So if the future cannot be changed, it is canon that in the future Spock will sit on that hill with those little dancing nymphs and sing Bilbo Baggins. I was going to say, I know, you know, we've in a way been a bit meh about this episode, but I think we've also said that he's setting a lot up, and I'm still really positive about the series.
Oh yeah. No doubt. I think this is probably one episode that was not that great, but the rest of them are going to be great. Andrea?
I've got a ridiculous point, really. But just on the sort of subject of kind of Bilbo Baggins, that's getting a lot of name checking. It's I'm very mindful at the moment of Shatner's Common People. I'm going to see Pulp in 2 weeks. And I've got to look at Jarvis Cocker and not think about William Shatner singing Common People. I really don't want to do that. Pulp, one of my favourite bands of all time. So on levels of cringe musical careers, I feel like Shat's still winning.
Possibly. Back in the day, way, way back in the mid-60s, when Leonard Nimoy was my big crush, he had several albums out, and he actually did a nice version of Common People. So maybe you can find that somewhere on the YouTube. I had one more comment on this episode and in general, that inappropriate timing seems to be a problem in the various new series. We're in an urgent situation, but hey, let's have an important emotional conversation, to wit the Klingon D7 in this episode. Or 3 minutes of nostalgia on the bridge of the Enterprise D before they fly off to urgently stop the assimilation of the fleet.
But to be fair,
folks, the galaxy hangs in the balance.
But to be fair, if that had been Next Generation Picard, not only would they have stopped and had the conversation, they'd have gone to the ready room to do it. So that would have taken even longer.
Conference room, yeah. The big conference room. Anybody else? Have we all emptied our tanks?
Oh, there's a callback.
That reminds me, I need to go to the toilet.
Oh, thanks for sharing, Deb.
You mentioned empty tanks.
How many lights you see?
Four lights!
I asked how many lights you see.
It's time for lights out of five. Suki?
Yes. Well, as I said, I thought it was a bit of a middling episode, so I'm not going to give it really high marks. I think it only deserves 3.5. So that's what I'm going to go with, 3.5 lights out of 5.
3.5. How about Andrea?
So I've got 3.5 as well. I found it weirdly less than the sum of its parts.
Yes. Yes. Deb?
2.5.
Yes.
2.5, did you say? Sorry.
2.5.
Right, okay.
2.5. It's a middling episode, and that's right in the middle, so me too.
2. We are mathematically correct in the middling.
Yes, we are.
Well, I'll never pass my R-levels in maths.
As Andrea said, it was not equal to the sum of its parts. Or, yeah. And I guess now it's time for listeners' feedback. Andrea, you want to take Dave Moore?
Yep. So Dave Moore says, excellent first episode of season 2. I love Ethan Peck's version of Spock. It's good to see the feelings he has for the gorgeous Nurse Chapel being explored. The scene with M'Benga and Chapel as well fighting the Klingons was excellently executed. And what really made the episode, Spock with a hangover.
So we got David Paul, and he says, peace and long life for me. This was a great way to start of the new series and set up our new story arc. Glad to see Pike sticking to his promise to support Una in her dismissal case, conveniently allowing Spock to sit in the big chair. Super seeing Uhura now in her proper bridge position as a young ensign and really performing her duties well on the bridge. Now, the trope of warp core bridge to get unwelcome visitors off the bridge has been used many times in Trek, but to have the expert inspector on ship to call them out was brilliant. I think she's going to prove to be a Marmite character, but I already love Pena. Nice touch that she knows Spock's mother and is an intriguing new humanoid race. Speaking of Spock, the way Dr. M'Benga introduced music therapy as a way of treating his stress was done very well. And also, Uhura knows that Spock is musical, foreshadowing later Trek. I also think that this way of uncovering Spock's human Vulcan inner conflict is an expansion of the original series, not a contradiction. I enjoyed the action sequences, especially the juiced up M'Benga Chapel sequences and their desperate out of the airlock escape. Superb. We are aware of Klingon honour, and I thought the final peace negotiations were very in-universe and echoed in the Top Brass final conversation, setting up the story arc to not fight a war on two fronts. Was it gone? To summarise, as usual, super performances. I like the setup storyline, which re-established the Federation-Klingon dynamic. Good to see Spock in the big chair. For me, it's as if the original series has dropped through a wormhole and been upgraded for our era. It's currently the closest thing to Star Trek, the original series, of any of the recent outings. Anyway, I award 3 lights out of 5 to give me some manoeuvring space. Cheers for that, Davey.
Okay, next we have Sarah. Deb, would you like to read Sarah?
All my days, Strange New Worlds was like welcoming back old friends. What a great start to the weekend. I have no problem at all with the mishmash of reused plot lines. I loved every minute of it. Jess Bush is wonderful as Nurse Chapel and lifts everyone around her in every scene. Also looking forward to seeing more of the new engineer, Pete Pellier, who for me will always be the ghost of Christmas present from Scrooge. Okay, so everybody else knows her. I'm going 4 lights out of 5, but only because I expect this to get better and better.
Okay, Steve Davis says, and we're off and running. Loved this episode. SNW continues to deliver pacey adventures with a healthy kick of character development. Mbenga and Chapel make a great team. I could watch hours of them together. I also love how the Spock we're seeing here feeds nicely into the Cage, with his emotional struggle shining through. I don't know why it struck me with this episode, but young Spock here and very old Spock are closer to each other than the Spock of much of TOS and the movies. Spock Prime from the JJ verse and Strange New World Spock would get along great, I reckon. Great story concept this episode and very competent effects. And Pike number one still to come. Five lights, no notes.
Yay.
Okay, so Dave K says, very excited to have Strange New Worlds back, my favorite of the modern treks. A strong opening adventure in many ways, but in other ways an odd choice to have several key cast members absent for all or part of the story. I also suspect this might prove a strange jumping on point for new viewers. Your thoughts? But a good plot, nice couple of twists, and Spock was fantastic. Just hope Chief Kyle's absence from this episode doesn't mean he's not in season two. 3.6 lights. I knew someone had mentioned Chief Kyle. I'd read that. So yeah, my understanding is he has left the show, but I would like to be proven wrong.
So we have Jack McMorrow next.
So we got our Jack. And Jacka says, as Captain Archer says, well, here we are again. I watched each episode of the first season Virgin Atlantic had on the trip to Los Angeles. Loved it once again. But I think Virgin are having a laugh as they only do the first four episodes. Back to the show I love for how high it is, how high its batting average is, and moreover to me, how disability positive it is. Inevitably, that might lessen with the loss of Chief Engineer Hemmer. But even then, we have Space James Bond on his journey to accept the BB chair, Captain Pike. I feel it must be said, my birthday is June 17th. So upon hearing this and how much I love season one, the second is basically an early birthday present to me from Star Trek. Thank you to all. Happy birthday, Jack. It was a brave decision to start by doing a Discovery season three where the top two of the cast basically just cameo. But it tells me episode two will be mostly eschewing the cast from Spock downwards. Also, the lawyer Pike mentioned might be Samuel Cogley, Kirk's lawyer in the original series. The plot with the rescue of Larn I broadly like and love that Klingons are getting more and more in line with how they look like in TNG to early Enterprise and Picard. But if I'm off work, they don't act like I'm dead. Why does Starfleet use Larn being on leave as justification for leaving her to possibly die? Also, was I the only one who found it weird when Spock intensely tries to save Nurse Chapel but just leaves Dr. Mbenga to it? Especially because there's presumably a first aid trained transporter operator in the room and a group of paramedics running to the transporter room. I think we sort of mentioned this in our feedback as we were talking about it, Jack, so I'm not sure.
Jack put it better.
Yeah, he probably did. He did, actually. Still, I rightly enjoyed the episode and will now look forward to Thursdays for a while. Less like yesterday, I was trying to watch a next door play this really loud hi-fi. Mate, grow up. Could he be red-shirted? That's my mom calling. I give the Unbroken Circle 3 CPRs out of 5. It wasn't perfect, but I'm looking forward to more Strange New Worlds, and especially the episodes which are Una's Trial and the crossover with Lower Decks, another show I beyond love. Jack has actually bagged that episode to come on, so whenever we have that crossover episode, Jack will be on that to review it. P.S. I work with a few Trekkies. I try to say make it so as often as possible when I like an idea. I might change that too. I want the ship to go now. Is that what Seven said on the Enterprise G? For those playing at home, I've now written 23,360 words for Trek This Out. The dissertation for my master's was 15,000 words. Blimey, that's a lot of words there, Jack. Thank you for that.
I have Marcus Squire. Maybe not hitting last season's height, a 7 out of 10 for me. Spock continues to shine. You're right. I can see why bridge banter may not suit some, but I like it. The Doc and Chapel fighting their way out of trouble, and the Klingon folding under interrogation didn't feel right. Yeah. Spock and Pellier, heart.
Bruce Wayne says, I was so pleased to see the return of Pike and crew. One of the areas where series often suffer is the mopping up from the obligatory cliffhanger from the prior series. Often it's done badly with plot maneuvers that are as smooth as a porcupine's backside. However, in this case, it was done quite well, bringing most of the crew back together with only the introduction of what will evidently be the main story arc going forward, the Gorn being slightly clunky. Where they do have right with is that they are letting the characters come through to the fore, so you genuinely start to identify with and care about them. It's a true ensemble piece that is well acted, and you feel the connections between the characters are genuine. I don't want to sound like a canon-obsessed internet fanboy, but it has a feeling of the Star Trek of old, but the quality and production values seem so much higher. I can't wait to see how some of the storylines develop, and after the first episode, I'm left feeling just as excited as I was in the run-up to it being released, which can only mean that it's doing its job and not letting us down like a punctured airbed. All in all, a confident start, a good 4.5 lights, and satisfaction that my enjoyment wasn't gorn in 60 seconds.
See what you did there.
Next is Andrea.
So I've got Schrodinger's librarian who says, Spock did Pike proud this episode. Can't wait to see what he says when he gets back. My partner wonders if any other Starfleet vessel has been stolen as many times as many iterations as the Enterprise. Carol Kane was the highlight for me. Nothing gets past Pellier. She's an excellent addition to the season 2 crew, and I look forward to seeing more of her. Wonderful first episode. I give it 4 out of 5. Ka'athra?
I think that's one of the names for the Vulcan lute or lyre.
I knew it had a name. I did. Well, thank you. That solved that conundrum from the episode. Thank you very much.
I've got a really short one for once, and it's from Drew, and he says, great stuff, more of the same quality that we saw in season 1, only one complaint, not enough Pike.
I've got Jennifer Lee Rossman, who will be joining us very soon to help host an episode. I can't wait to see more of Spock and Pellier interacting. I wonder if she knows about Michael, since she and Amanda are so close. Good point.
Oh, that could be interesting. Lucius Paisley says, I'd like to see Mia Kirshner and James Frayne again at some point soon, no matter how small the reason. Sarek and Amanda for the win. Yeah, I agree.
Seconded.
Well, and back to Andrea for Tom Turlough.
So, an enjoyable start to the second series of what is now basically the flagship new Trek series. It seemed a bit odd to lose your main character in episode 1, but Spock filled in admirably in the captain's chair. Lots of action and emotional moments to be had. Obviously, they are setting up the Gorn as the big bad for this series, but Strange New Worlds is never overly arc-heavy. It's a bit weird that they're going so strong on the Spock-Chapel relationship, bearing in mind we know it doesn't end up going anywhere. The second series is often run 4 lights out of 5.
And finally, for the written feedback, we have Will, and they have said, well, it's the weakest Star Trek idea, which is to put our protagonist in danger and then grieve when they are injured. It's almost a bad trope. Star Trek should have ideas like in the season 1 episode 1 episode. Cheers for that, Will. We do have some audio feedback. And this is Phil Cannon from the Who's He podcast.
Hi guys, Phil here from the Who's He podcast. Just drop you a little audio clip of my thoughts on episode 1 of season 2 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Broken Circle. I'm going to say first off, it's great to have it back. I think it's one of the most joyful Star Trek programs ever made, actually. I think it's wonderful. I really enjoyed season 1. It's some of the best Trek we've had in years. until Picard season 3 came along, of course. But no, it's just wonderful to have it back again and just to have some television that's, well, just fun, really. Yeah, I absolutely love this episode. Strange thing, though, we do away with our lead character, Captain Pike, played by Anson Mount. He disappears within the first sort of 10 minutes of the episode. He's gone off to help Number One, sort of clear her name, which I think is an interesting choice to do without an episode of the series. So it puts Spock front and centre. And I love Ethan Peck's take on Spock. I think he really shines in this particular story, as he is sort of playing that sort of conflicted Spock. Maybe we'll see him sort of brace his emotions a bit more. There seems to be sort of certainly hinted at within this episode, especially as Dr. M'Benga says he has to live with it after he sort of released his anger with the Gorn at the end of the previous series. So I think that will certainly come to play further down the line. But again, as we know with Star Trek Strange New Worlds, it's all standalone episodes. So obviously there's going to be a little sort of story arc for characters rather than a series arc. And I prefer that, actually. So let's see where we go with that. And maybe it might go somewhere to explain why we get the smiling Spock in the cage, the pilot episode made back, you know, back in the 60s. Anyway, yeah, so I loved it. I love the fact that they go on like a covert mission to steal the Enterprise. It's very, very Search for Spock, again, Spock themed. And I like the introduction of Carol Kane's character, Pelia, who is, I think I'm pronouncing it right, a Lanthanite, a new species that's been hiding out on Earth for centuries until they sort of, you know, outed themselves or got outed. Yeah, and it's got, again, another connection to Spock. So a very, very Spock-themed story, this one. But I like the fact they'll go undercover, even though it's the whole the whole sort of bridge crew, more or less, go down undercover on this one. But we do meet Klingons. Straight away, we've got Klingons in the thick of the story, and it's a little sort of conspiracy story as well to reignite the Klingon War, Klingon Federation War, I should say, and... Yeah, and we're back to the original Klingon designs again. So the Discovery Klingons appear to have been dispensed with, which I'm kind of pleased about because I found that the Discovery Klingons were a little bit too busy makeup-wise. It was over-designed, if you see what I mean. So I think it we're back to our familiar-looking Klingons again. So, yeah, I am really, really happy to see them. Plenty of blood wine was drunk by everybody. And Benga and Nurse Chapel were a couple of badasses who thought that just having a couple of shots of, I've heard it described somewhere as weapons-grade adrenaline, will sort of give them sort of amazing fighting prowess. But it was good. It's good to see Dr. M'Benga do something else rather than just hang around in sick bay. So that was really, really good. And I hope they do revisit his past trauma of the previous Klingon War as well. And another little thing I loved as well was the reappearance of a Klingon battlecruiser straight out of the motion picture, that one. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Yeah, I'm so looking forward to what's going to come next. I'm assuming the next episode will be Captain Pike sort of defending... Number One from sort of being locked up in prison. So I'm hoping that's going to be the next episode, and it all comes back into the whole crew's back together again come episode 3. But I don't care. I just love all the actors in this. I love the scripts, the dialogue. It's absolutely wonderful. And I'm so glad to have it back on our screens again. Just one final thought, though. It looks like the series arc again is going to be the Gorn, and well, who knows where this is going to lead. It looks like this is going to be a Federation versus Gorn all out war this season. Who knows what's going to happen, but it's certainly interesting, and interesting to bring a character or a villain like that back from like being a one shot in the original series, and it sort of was sporadic during the first season of Strange New Worlds. So it looks like they are definitely going to be the big new bad. So yeah, very much looking forward to it. So there you go. That's enough of me rambling. Keep up the good work, guys. Love the podcast. And thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for that, Phil. And we have now some more audio feedback from Steve Hatcher from the Hoover's Doctor Who group.
Hello, this is Stephen Hatcher from the Hoover's Doctor Who group. Well, Star Trek Strange New World is back with a bang. The Broken Circle, the first episode of the second season, opens with the Enterprise in space dock being inspected. Chris Pike gets personal leave to go and help Una in her legal troubles, leaving Spock in command for the first time. Well, it's not ideal timing for Spock because his emotions are all over the place. They're unchecked following the battle with the Gorn. And these emotions particularly surface in his relations with Christine Chapel. There's this great underlying passion between them which is never quite declared. It's quite reminiscent, actually, of the Spock that we saw in the original Star Trek pilot, The Cage, where that particular version of Spock was a Vulcan of emotions rather than the controlled Spock we saw in later seasons. Well, no sooner is Spock in command than a distress call comes in from Lan Nunyan Singh. And the response of Spock to that is actually to steal the Enterprise and go off to see what's going on a hunch, as he describes it. I suppose this idea of the commander of the Enterprise stealing the ship is a bit of an old trope by now. Over the years we've seen Kirk do it, we see Spock do it now, of course, we've seen Picard steal ships, we've seen, I don't know who, but it seems to be a bit of a trope that we get the captains of Starfleet ships stealing their ships to go off on personal missions. You would think by now that there'd be something written into the protocols that would allow the Starfleet to do something about this when they appoint people to Starfleet captains, to check that one of the first questions they should ask them is, are you planning to steal your ship? But anyway, off he goes, and he goes to find Lan, and she's on this mining planet which, following the Klingon War and the treaty afterwards, is being operated on a sort of a timeshare basis. It's a little bit odd. The Federation is in charge of it some of the time, and the Klingons the rest of the time, but unfortunately, this is the Klingons' weeks, so Federation ships are really not allowed there, and Spock in the Enterprise turning up risks war, so he has to stay very much out of sight. Lan's discovered that there's a plot by a criminal gang aiming to reignite the Federation Klingon War. And what I loved about this, that their motive in doing that was quite simply profit. They'd found that peace was nowhere near as profitable as war. So in order to make more money, reignite the economy of the planet, their plan was to start the war again. And in order to do that, they've got a Federation ship hidden in a cave, which is going to mount some sort of false flag operation against the Klingons. But we're jumping ahead a little bit here, because Dr. M'Benga and Christine Chapel are then captured by this naughty criminal gang, and they escape using superpower fighting drugs I can only describe them as. They take these drugs and they can basically beat up a whole room full of Klingons. I'm not quite sure what to make of that, to be honest, but it's a great little scene of when they both go absolutely crazy and beat up these Klingons. And Babs Alusan Mokun and Jess Bush, as the two of them, are absolutely great in that scene, as they are throughout the episode, actually. And he rode up. So, they escape, and they signal Spock, at all costs, destroy this fake Federation ship, which leaves him with a bit of a dilemma, because he can destroy the ship and thereby prevent the war, but he doesn't actually know whether the Doctor and Christine might still be on board it. Well, as we know, they are absolutely on board it. But anyway, that's Spock's dilemma, and he resolves that. This is an excellent episode, a rollicking good adventure to start the new season. All the cast are on absolutely great form, but special note of praise has to be given to Jess Bush and Babs Alusan Mokun, who are really terrific. You got to say as well, Ethan Peck's pretty brilliant as Spock. I want to note the fabulous design work as well, the strange mining planet with its huge underground caves and its almost Chris Foss-like designs of huge columns of rock coming up from the surface looked absolutely superb. It really did look tremendous. It's a highlight of this episode. Well, this episode shows that Star Trek Strange New Worlds can deliver a great episode even without Anson Mount's Chris Pike, because after the first 5 minutes, he's not there. And it also sets up what may yet turn out to be a season arc, the continuing threat from the Gorn. So, a really good start to the season, with lots of promise for great things to come over the next, 10 weeks altogether? So, very much looking forward to the rest of the season. And I'll continue sending in these comments as a minute. Oh, I nearly forgot. Suki asked me to give a score out of 5 for this one. Well, I've said it's an excellent episode, so my score out of 5 is yes.
Superb. Thank you for that, Steve.
I woke up this morning, put on my red shirt. Oh.
It's time for the red shirt of the week. Who do you nominate, Andrea?
Deb.
What?
I forgive her for having not seen The Princess Bride. I haven't let go of that, and I'm up for some time. So, yeah, that seems solid reason to me.
Okay. Suki?
Yes, it's been a very decent episode. I understand Andrea's point of view on nominating Deb for not seeing The Princess Bride. But I don't want to keep nominating Deb each week. All right, so I've got to go. I don't know who to go with, but I'm going to go with Andrea because I've a feeling by the time next week comes along, she's going to be covered in tribbles, and I might as well say goodbye to her now.
Yeah, that's a way to go, isn't it? Deb, who do you nominate?
I'm nominating Kat because just because you've been with us a few times now, you are a long-term listener like I was, and you're part of the family, and I just thought it was your turn.
Oh, thank you, Deb.
It's a sign of love.
Yeah.
So who are you going to vote for? Because you do have the deciding vote, really, Kat.
Well, Suki, although you've been a great help, you kept doing the host thing.
I did. I just can't help myself.
So I'm going to nominate you.
Yeah, it's fair. Fair. I understand. I do like to butt in when I shouldn't really be taken. So how are you going to get rid of me?
How would I get rid of you?
The airlock is obvious. Andrea.
I was going to say he's going to enter into a drinking competition with Lan and he's not going to survive, bless him, is he?
I only need one sip of alcoholic whatever and I'll probably be under the table as it is. As Andrea just suddenly drains her wine glass.
It could be a Vimto drinking competition.
Well, that's true, yeah. Did you all see the picture that we put up of Izzy getting her can of Vimto as
very
a prize for best guest presenter?
Yes. See how much Vimto you can drink before you explode.
What is Vimto? The American said.
It's like a fizzy, like fruit kind of soda drink.
Oh.
Don't ask me what fruit it tastes of because there are no fruits that taste like Vimto. It's like...
No.
It's his thing. It's his own thing. It's got its own sort of bizarre flavour.
Just have a look online, and you'll see the pictures of the cans, and then because you can get it all sorts of different varieties. But yeah, so I'm going to explode with a can of Vimto, drinking loads of Vimto, I assume.
Whilst jumping out of an airlock.
As long as I've got Christine Chappell in my arms, I don't mind.
Oh, yeah.
That's a fun way to go.
Yeah. Speaking of dying, I guess it's time for us to say goodbye.
it has been a real pleasure hosting this week. So,
yes, have you enjoyed yourself, Kat?
Yes, I did, pretty much.
yet again, the guest host shows us up.
Guest house has got to control the person that keeps trying to navigate by the from the driver's the passenger side.
You didn't see me shaking my finger, did you?
I did, but I was wondering if you were talking about the other two, you know, because I've been such a good boy.
Oh,
yeah, he's such a backseat driver. It's all right.
I think we should let Andrea be in charge next week to keep you in place.
Well, actually, one of us will be in charge next week. Actually, yeah. So, our next guest host next week will be Jennifer Lee Rossman, but one of us will be hosting. So, just put your names in the hat as to who wants to host next week.
I think we should have a poll. I think we should have a listener poll. Who should host next week?
Ooh. Well, we could do that.
All right, we'll, the Tribbles.
Yeah, we ain't going to get much work done if the Tribbles are hosting, are we?
All right, okay. Listener can decide who hosts next week then. It's not a popularity, though.
But oh, yeah, no, it better not be popularity.
Boris Tribble is too busy breeding to host a podcast, so, you know, like his namesake.
Boris is a very prolific Tribble, and that's saying something. Well, this is Kat signing off for this week's Trek This Out podcast. I'll say goodbye, Andrea, Deb.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Right. I'm going to carry on recording. Right. So then we can. I just need this little bit.
I just say next week. I'll be at my mum and dad's, so it'll be fine. I can still do it. But last time I was at mum and dad's and we recorded, mum was saying, "What's a podcast? What's a podcast?" And I was trying to explain to her that we discussed an episode, and she's going, "Yeah, but what?" So then she was a bit, you know, sort of a bit miffed that I disappeared, but and a bit intrigued. So when I came down, I recorded. The episode, I played a bit of the episode that we'd done before, and I said, "Look, it's just nice. We talk about an episode. It's, you know, a review show." And so I played it, and it was the last episode of Picard, which was brilliant. And I come on, I immediately said, "Well, I thought it was shit," and that was my eloquent comment about Picard, which she took as literal. I said, "Well, for one thing, she doesn't believe I swear." So that's the first time she'd ever heard a swear word from my mouth, even though I've never actually given her that to believe. I just don't swear in front of her, and also she genuinely thinks that that's what the whole podcast was about, that we were just sitting there saying, "Well, this was shit then." So it will be interesting. Let's just hope. I'm sure the next episode will not be shit, just like the last episode of Picard wasn't. So I may even get my mum to come on and say hello.
Can do. We'll have her as a guest
host. No. You really wouldn't want to know what she thought of Star Trek.
Oh, okay. God.
Do you know what you were just going on about swearing? When we was kids, our mum and dad didn't know that much English. Right, so they knew the swear words. So they knew bloody, bastard and fuck. Right? So we never used them words, but we went around using all the other words in front of them. Right? So we'd be going, "Yeah, cunt, you'd be doing this, all this swearing, bloody wanker, and all this," and they wouldn't understand what it is. Now, of course, she's been a bit around a bit. She knows what we're saying. And it's we do get a clip around the ear. I'll watch your language when we do swear in front of her. But yeah, your mum sounds exactly like ours. I'm not including you in this, Bab.
Bab is Birmingham for babe. Is it?
Yeah, you could.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
And what would you say?
Pet. And
pet.
Yeah. Pet. Everyone's pet.
And in like Loughborough, it's
like the woman in the shop would say, "What would you like, pet?" Like, yeah. I think if you're from outside of the northeast of England, someone you don't know calling you pet's quite weird, but it's just... It's like punctuation here, really.
Well, here it would be duck.
Mm.
Duck, yeah, it is. When I used to work on the markets, I used to work in the markets from about 15 to about, no, actually about 14 to about 21. And every word I'd say, any customer could, because I was selling ladies' clothes, it'd be, hello, darling, you're right, darling, darling, you're right, darling. Right, and I got used to saying that all the while. And then when I went to work at Royal Mail, yeah, you couldn't go around saying that to the women at all. Right, so I've had to curb that, and it's always been Bab. I've just gone back to my old Bab. You're right, Bab. I'll book all that at any point then.
Yeah, I think Andrea may be doing the same because she's just draining her wine glass.
No, I've still got dregs.
No, I thought you were going to go for a refill.
Chateau.
If I want a refill, I just have to send a text message downstairs.
Hello, Michael.
Hi.
My Tribble's getting amorous because it's seeing Andrea's Tribbles. It's a long time since it's seen another Tribble.
I don't need no Tribble sex on this podcast, you know. Enough swearing, now we're going to have sex as well.
I don't think we ever see it. I think it's just Tribbles are together and bam, out comes another one. They just pop out left and right. Okay.
Thank you for listening, and you can find us all on Twitter as a group. You can find us on at TrekThisOutPod, or you can go to our Facebook page at TrekThisOut. Just Google that. You can find me out on Twitter as Sidemat_151.
So you can find me on Twitter as at Vintage1983V if you're into Star Trek shitposting and a lot of other thirst. If you particularly like to follow me Star Trek art, have a look on Instagram for Vin of the Basement.
And I'm just Lufdee, LUFFDEE on Twitter. But if you are interested in knowing our obsession about Jason Isaacs, you can find me, Kat, and Andrea posting weird stuff about Jason Isaacs. #TeamBasement.